Martin, Dominic Steele, and today we're talking the mistakes that senior pastors make with Craig Hamilton. But before we come to Craig, it actually takes quite a bit to develop the pastor's heart each week. There are production costs, video, audio editing and mixing, social media and website coordination. And look, we are working hard to reach and support more Christian leaders, but we need your help to move this ministry to the next level. We have ideas for growth, but we need to make things sustainable at this level first. And so if the pastor's heart has helped you, encouraged you, challenged you in any way, can I ask you to sign up as a supporter? You can go to www.patreon.com/thepastor'sheart. And I think $5 a month would be a good way to start. And you would hardly notice it. And collectively, it would be extremely effective. Craig Hamilton, thanks for coming to join us.
Dominic, good to be back.
Of course, Craig, super well known for the very helpful book, Wisdom in Leadership. And you're writing another one.
This is right, yes. Yep, one more coming in the pipeline.
You sent me a chapter to review, and I read it through, and I thought, I want to talk to you about it before it comes. I couldn't wait till it comes out. And so we're going to talk about 15 mistakes that senior pastors make.
Yep.
But before we come to that, the heart of a pastor and the heart of a leader and the pastor's heart, and what's God been doing on your heart?
Well, I mean, just recently, someone very close to me died.
Your mum.
Yeah. And so this has been one of the things I've been realizing. You know, there's lots of things that have happened. And, you know, it was sad and traumatic. But there's little things that I've realized that I've never realized before. Things like it's so weird when a person becomes a postcard, you know. They get frozen in time. There's an image, you know, that you can... You can only visit in your memories, but you can't ever actually go back there. Things like that. That's just, I've never really experienced that before, existentially experienced it. But I trust the Lord. He is still good. The plan is still right. There is no plan B. It's all plan A. And so I trust him.
There's been a big few weeks. I mean, I rang you not knowing that. I mean, I rang you and you were at the funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. It's been a big few weeks. Yep. But we do not lose heart. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. I succeed when the ministries that are under me succeed.
Right.
What does that mean?
Yeah, this is sort of the key snapshot for what I think success as a senior leader looks like. I succeed when the ministries under me succeed. This is a part of a bigger leadership pipeline. Let's do a leadership pipeline crash course.
Yeah, we got 15 things we get wrong. What do we get right?
Yeah, so crash course. There are layers of leadership, mm-hmm. and we kind of know this. Leaders, maybe team leaders, maybe someone who leads the whole kids ministry, a senior leader. Mm-hmm. There are these like layers. And then in each of those layers, you can break them up into three main components. There's things that you need to learn. There's ways you need to use your time. And then there's what I would call the heart focus. And we're usually pretty okay with, at different layers, you need to learn different things. A team leader needs to learn how to run a team and mm-hmm. give feedback and stuff. And then maybe they know they need to think about not just who's doing the Bible talk this week, but who's doing it next week, and Jill's away in 4 weeks' time, so we need to swap it. They're thinking a bit ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that maybe we miss is the heart focus that needs to shift as we go to these different leadership layers. What I mean is, when I'm a leader, like I'm a creche kids
mm-hmm.
leader, my job is to love the kids, look after them, read the Bible story, make sure no one hurts themselves, all those things. So one way to put that is I succeed when I succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an individual contributor. But as soon as I become a team leader, now it's not that I succeed when I succeed. If you're on my team and we're doing the creche, I succeed when you succeed.
Mm-hmm.
When you look after the kids well or read the Bible story or whatever it is, then I succeed.
Mm-hmm.
What's hard about that is that, you know, in kind of Christian discipleship, my fruit grows on my tree. But in leadership, as I move up leadership layers, my fruit starts to grow on other people's trees,
mm-hmm.
which is which can be incredibly painful. Because everyone used to praise me for how fruitful my tree was. And now people are praising you for how fruitful your tree is. But that fruit, that's my fruit.
Mm.
Now it's on your tree. And so that transition, I succeed when you succeed, is incredibly hard, incredibly painful. And
it actually requires other person-centeredness.
Right, because pride is such a big issue in all of our lives.
Mm.
And so it becomes a real challenge. And so the senior leader, now that you've got ministries happening, now it's I succeed when the ministries under me succeed. Mm-hmm. Crash course over.
Okay, I'm going to go quickly. Inability, number one mistake senior pastors make, according to your forthcoming book, inability to let go of management functions.
Yes. This is that there are things that you need to do, tactical things, you know, the chairs need to get put out, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But a mistake is that the senior leader can be unable to let those things go.
Mm.
Now, obviously, sometimes you need to do it. Seasons happen and you got to put the chairs out. You need to pack up, put the things away. Sometimes things happen, of course. The mistake is when I am unable to let those things go. And so then I'm back being an individual contributor. I succeed when I succeed.
Mm. One-man showism?
Yeah. Another, it's like a variant of that. This is now I'm the genius with 1,000 helpers. I call the plays, I make every call, and then I pass the ball to you and you go run the play. But it's all up to me. I'm the one who makes every choice, every decision, which means there's no leadership actually happening under me.
And I'm about making me look good rather than the team win.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So that's like a variation, but it's the same kind of thing where I'm the individual contributor.
You had one, hand-holding area leaders. Now, it's in situational leadership, this is hard to know how much do I be directive and how much do I be delegatory.
Exactly, yes. So this is a challenging one. And so sometimes it's fine. If, you know, you've got a new person who's, say, a new kids ministry leader, who's leading that whole ministry uh-huh. area, they're going to be excited, enthusiastic. They may not be as competent. And so you might have to tell them exactly what you want them to do. That's fine. That's normal situational leadership. But as they start to get clearly competent and can do the job, it's my job to, like you said, morph and stop being so directive and start allowing them to make the calls. But again, if this is a mistake, when I might be still clamping on them as if they were a rookie when they've been doing this job for 2 years or 3 years and they know how to do it, they don't need me to micromanage them.
Mm.
That's a mistake.
What about when they've been doing it for 2 or 3 years and they're not delivering what you think they should be delivering by now?
Yes. I mean, that's a great little moment where it perhaps signals to you that you might have made a hiring mistake. If you need to tightly manage someone more and more and more as time moves on, that's probably a sign that you've hired the wrong person.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Solving problems down the pipeline.
Yeah. So again, so you think about it, you're the senior leader, you're up here, and then there's your youth minister, and then he's got some team leaders, and they're leading some leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a problem that happens down here amongst the leaders.
Mm.
The temptation can be that I need to jump down and deal with this issue, which is wrong. What I should do as a senior leader is spend time with my youth minister right here, more time up this end, and then he then solves these problems down here. It shouldn't be me who jumps all the way down.
Give me a concrete example.
Well, let's say you've got some dramas happening in one of your youth teams.
No, not some dramas. Tell me what the drama is.
Let's say there's leaders in there who are doing like a bad job with their behaviour management, mm-hmm. and parents are getting really upset.
And they're ringing little Johnny's, the senior leader.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So the temptation would be that you need to then have a conversation with some of these leaders and tell them to figure it out or pull their head in or whatever you might want to say to them. But that would be a bad idea, because if you do that, even if it might be the right thing that someone needs to talk to these youth leaders, it shouldn't be you, because now you've just undermined your youth minister and perhaps even the team leader. And now it becomes, well, I'm clearly, you don't need those. You can just lead these youth leaders. And so you've demotivated those layers. And they're now like, well, next time there's a problem, I'll just wait until Dominic solves it. And so now you're going to have to do all kinds of extra work that you didn't need to do.
And all kinds of relational work with those people to restore the hurt feelings.
Exactly. And, that's right.
And extra empowerment of them.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, you talked about hiring mistakes, poor judgment, selection for key roles. This is such a difficult thing.
Yeah, I think hiring staff might be one of the most difficult things that a senior leader needs to do. Because wouldn't it be nice just to have, you know, the Lord just whisper into your ear in the interview, you know, this guy's an idiot, don't hire him. But that's just not how it works. But selecting those key roles, whether they're staff or volunteer, you know, parish councillors or wardens, or there are just key roles that the senior leader needs to fill. And that is one of the most critical parts of their job. And it's very difficult. And when a senior leader struggles, then the consequences can be huge.
So there's going to be two issues there, I'm thinking. Sometimes the talent pool's not that rich, but sometimes you actually make not the best decision. I mean, you can't do too much about the talent pool not being rich. Rich, but it's the mistakes that you make. Now, what sort of expectation should we have? Like,
well, no one's going to get this right. 100% of the time. That's it. Or if they do, they're amazing. You should thank the Lord for them, but don't try and imitate them. But if you can get this right more than 50%,
I think you're doing better than most people.
You might be doing better than most people.
Yeah.
Because it's a really hard issue to hire, because the interview is such a... It's not the best way to find out who this person is and can they do the job, but it's the best we've got.
Well, plus references, things like that. But even then, it's difficult.
It's hard. But it's the job. Right? Yeah. It's the senior leader's job. It's very hard. But it's the job.
And it takes a long time to get over a bad hire.
Right. That's right. Not just financially, but
it's devastating for the church.
Right. If they've done a bad job and things are broken, it'll take you years to fix it, let alone people have come to love them perhaps. You know, there's there's a relational part of it where people now love them because they're people and now they've had to go. There's all kinds of relational fallout that happens.
It is helpful, though, for us in this conversation to normalise that actually, I mean, I think some of the congregation think you're Christian, it should just work perfectly of their leaders, which is not the way it's going to be.
It's just not. It's just not. Sometimes there's people are lovely and maybe even competent, but for some reason it just doesn't work and it's sad, but it's reality.
Inability to attract and retain a strong team, that there is a sense some people want to go and work for and with someone.
I mean,
so
we're
looking for that gift.
That's right. This is it's more of a developing the culture of the church and maybe even the reputation of the church. So it might be a bit unfair to say there's a mistake that someone's making, but if someone is finding it hard to attract quality staff, it could be that there's something dysfunctional happening with them or in their church. Not necessarily, but could be. It's possible. But then if you can't retain them, then again, possibly there's a problem with you as the leader, but not necessarily. It could just be, if you can't retain quality staff, it could be that there are opportunities that they need to take and you need to release them to go do. That'd be great. Or it could be that just the culture of the area that you're in is that people move on, you know, every 3 years. And so you're not going to be able to retain. And that's just going to be how it is. So just because someone's not retaining their staff isn't necessarily obviously a mistake. It's just that it could be a mistake.
Mm. Although, I'm just thinking about manager tools says, what are you trying to do as the leader? Well, you're trying to get your staff to be productive and you're trying to get them to stay.
Yeah.
Because it's such a cost to replace them.
It is.
And so, therefore, to help them grow in productivity, but also care for them.
Right.
Care for them is going to be, part of that's going to be letting the eagles fly, you know,
right.
letting them, trying to create space where they flourish and
right.
they want to be part of this growing environment.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. Exactly right. I mean, the old little slogan is that people join vision, but they leave leaders. That is, I've joined your church because I love what you do and I love what you're about, but I leave because I struggle with you.
Mm. Neglecting the soft side of church life. What is the soft side of church life?
Well, it's easy to say the hard side.
Okay, well, what's the hard
side? Would be things like Bible teaching, financial structures, attendance, things you can count, track.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be the hard side. And the soft side is things like the culture, things like buy-in, things like the emotional climate that you set as a leader. Are you always tense and stressed, or is it a casual environment?
Mm-hmm.
Is it an encouraging environment? All that kind of stuff. That's the soft side. Hard to track, hard to count, hard to measure, but equally as important as the hard stuff. Numbers, money, people, you know, that's the hard side, the soft side. And people overlook it, I think, because we're not trained in it. We're trained in the hard side, you know, the leading a small group and teaching the scriptures and counting.
Mm-hmm.
We're trained in that. But also because, you know, it's so rubbery and it's so vague, you know, culture and emotional climate, that's all very vague. So it's easier just to be like, let's go count some things.
In your book, you say, in your forthcoming book, you say it's the primary responsibility of the senior leader to worry about that soft side and to be really concerned to make sure things are going well in that area.
Right. I think that's right. Yeah. Because lots of that soft side, culture and emotional climate, comes from the senior. Like, it comes from there. It's very hard for it to come across ways or for a little pocket, you know, to then build it out. You know, it comes down. And so it's...
What sort of things as a senior leader can I do to build that and undermine that?
Yeah, that's a great... I think, you know, when it comes to culture, that's about who you are as a person. So the culture that you set is really just going to be who you are. And the emotional climate that you set is just going to be your emotional climate. If you're a highly, you know, if you get angry quickly, then that's going to be the emotional climate of the team, right? Everyone's going to be on tender hooks. Is he going to blow up? So it's about dealing with your own character and becoming the kind of person that you think, you know, that you should be. And so, it's, you know, you'll need to do the hard work of listening when someone maybe points out there's something about the culture that doesn't feel right. You'll need to listen, and that can be hard. I think it's about listening to those who have arrived, perhaps, new. Because those who've been around for a while, you know, they've
bought the culture and they've bought the soft side for good or bad.
Yeah. And they don't realise, you know, you go into your house and there's ornaments around and it smells a certain way, but you live there and you don't even see those things. But a visitor comes and they're like, what's with that ornament? That seems weird. Your house smells funny. Then it's like, oh, I didn't even realise. Thanks for telling me. It's like that, but in your church. And so the new person or the new staff will be able to smell the weirdness of your culture better than you can. So you should listen to them.
Next one, number eight, ignorance of how church works as a system.
Yeah. So often we're good and trained to think about things as individual units. You know, the name tag table, is that working? The people at the door who hand things out. And we look at things as individual units, which is good because they are, but those individual units exist in a wider system, like a welcoming system. So it's not just right to be like, how's the name tag table working? We should think about what happens before the name tag table, after the name tag table? How does it fit in that welcoming system? So it's just a bigger picture of how do all the pieces work with each other. But then it's more than that too. It's the kind of church.
It's the relationships between who different people and who are the power brokers that aren't on the management committee and those kind of things.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. It's the underlying, the dark energy, the dark matter of your church that you can't see, but that is actually
because you
there.
Can see who's the staff team, you can see who the church council is, but actually there's a whole lot of other influences and people who've got stakeholders and
Exactly. And it's the kind of what I would call the macro relationships of your church where, you know, perhaps the night service is where all your leaders come from that staff the morning service, but the morning service is where all the money comes from to pay for staff who run the night service.
Yep.
Just being aware of that macro system that if the night service begins to tank, that means in a year or two, your morning service is going to start struggling because you're not going to have enough leaders,
mm-hmm.
which means you're going to start losing money,
So when the morning service wants to put less money into the night service, you've actually got to be the advocate for the night service.
Right, because you know how this system works.
And they're taking for granted that these magic people turn up and do kids' ministry for them.
Yeah. Exactly.
Introducing God is a course that walks through the worldview of the Bible. It's a chance to explore and discuss what it says about life and God and what it means to have a relationship with Him. And it happens in a relaxed and friendly environment. It's for a range of people. If you've never read the Bible, if you've never gone to church, it's for you. If you haven't been to church in years and you're looking to reconnect with your faith, it's for you. If you're wanting to discuss ideas and hear different opinions, or if you just want to sit back and take it in, if you want to consider what it could look like for you to know God, it's for you.
I was raised Catholic, and at some point I think I had the disposition that, you know, just because you go to a garage doesn't mean you're a mechanic. Just like going to church doesn't mean, you know, you're a Catholic, or in that case. So I stopped going. God was very distant from where I was. He didn't seem to feel close, but I didn't really have a very good picture of who God was.
An Introducing God evening is always really warm and friendly. You can have a glass of wine and relax conversation over dinner. You watch a short video together, and then there's a chance to discuss some of the things it says over dessert and bounce ideas around. No question is off limits. It's an open discussion where you're free to be honest and say what you really think. This happens over a series of 7 or so weeks, and there's time to really dig into ideas and allow for them to simmer and be explored more fully as the weeks go on.
And I think coming to Introducing God with a healthy level of skepticism, not to the point where you actually can't, you know, accept certain things, like that helped me actually open my heart just a little bit, you know, to the possibility that, you know, God loves me and that He actually wants to know, well, He already knows me, but there's a chance for me to know Him. I remember on the first day, I was actually quite quiet. Like, I didn't want to impose any sort of question. I was actually quite nervous, and just listening. I think that was the biggest thing that I wanted to do. It's casual. Everybody's really, like, you know, friendly and loving. It's a very safe environment to voice any sort of disagreements you have. Like, I mean any, you really are made to think for yourself, because I think a lot of people, they're told what to think, but when you're told, you know, what do you think, then you suddenly have to think. At some point it became the best, like the day that I look forward to most during my week.
It'd be great to have you along to our next course. Bring yourself, bring a friend, come make some new friends and be introduced to God.
Zigzagging, constantly shifting priorities. And I mean, as a senior leader, people are coming to you all the time saying, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? Why don't we?
Yeah, that's right. And so it's a mistake to be constantly changing priorities or changing focus or being faddish. and constantly, rather than being like, this is where we're going to go, and it's going to take us a couple of years or 3 years or 5 years, let's pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
To constantly zigzag every 12 months or 6 months to whatever's wafting on the wind means that you won't ever be able to get the traction that you need. It takes time for these things to happen. So that's a mistake, constantly zigzagging, changing focus.
What about focusing on what already exists rather than pioneering for what could be, being the advocate for the potential?
Yes. And I think this sounds like the opposite of the first one. The first one is you need to not take opportunities, right? Stay with what you've got. Whereas this one is when you don't take any opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a wisdom, you know, there's a tension between staying the course and not changing, but then also not looking for any opportunities at all, not being aware of anything new that we might do. And that's just like a wisdom thing. Those two things maybe feel a bit opposite. So it's wisdom. When should I take an opportunity? When should I not? But if I'm constantly just in the weeds doing what we're currently doing and not as a senior leader looking for opportunities to do something else, then it's a mistake. Because the senior leader, as well as being an agent of organization, you know, getting things clear, getting things ready, the senior leader also needs to be an agent of disorganization and rough things up and do new things and wreck stuff a bit, break things a bit so that we can do the new thing.
Yeah. Give us an example.
Well, so, you know, you might be like, I'm just going to be doing all the things we currently do. We just need to
do it
more efficiently. Just work on these systems, work on these processes, efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. But efficiency is maybe not the best objective. Probably effectiveness is the best objective, which might mean not being very
changing,
efficient.
Stopping doing something, starting doing something new.
Right, that's right. I mean, Peter Drucker once said that, you know, the worst thing a leader can do is to make more efficient something that we shouldn't do to begin with.
Yeah.
And so we can get caught up in making the systems efficient and then not be aware enough that there's a new school that's opening up around the corner, or there's a new opportunity over here that we haven't thought of, or there's a church plant that we could be thinking about over here in the new area. But I'm not thinking about it because I'm just making sure we're getting more efficient at these systems and the stuff we've already got. That's a mistake, to not be up and aware. Now, it's not that the senior leader needs to be the one who sees all the opportunities or makes them more, but the senior leader needs to be the one who is allowing space for maybe other people to flag some things
and then decide, well, we're not going to do everything, but that's one actually that could really win for us.
Exactly
And that'll mean we'll have to stop doing that.
Right
What about the mistake of failing to develop your key team people?
Yeah.
Failing to develop your area leaders.
Yes. Yeah. So you've got some staff, or maybe you're in a church that doesn't have staff, but you've got key volunteers. Your job is to develop those, help them improve, help them get better at their jobs, help them grow as Christians, all those things. And so that means things like maybe taking them with you when you go to a conference, or you go to this meeting where they can meet some people that they don't know, or be exposed to a higher caliber of person or something. And leaders forget, you know, I just go to the meeting and I don't think, maybe I should have brought Bill along with me. Or I'm going on some trip, you know, and I just go, but maybe I could have brought Tom along for the trip too, and he could have been there and seen. It's that kind of thing where I'm not even meeting with my direct reports, you know, my people. Maybe I don't even meet with them at all, ever, once a year, or if something bad happens, I'll meet with them. That'd be a problem. That'd be a... Your job is to grow those people.
Yep. I mean, that'd be part of retaining them, but not just as a Christian. I don't just want to... as a Christian leader, I just don't want to retain them.
Yeah.
I want to equip as many people to be ambassadors for Christ to the best ability that they can be for Christ.
Right. You want to love
whether
these
it's
people.
Here or for the kingdom anywhere, or
that's right. And so you want to spend time with them. Mm. Are they, how's life? Are you okay? You know, you want to ask them.
Yeah. Now, the senior leader is going to take a bigger interest in things outside the patch. But you talk here about mistakes that the senior leader can make of misjudging how much time inside versus outside.
Right.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, the senior leader, I think, needs to be involved in more than just his local church. That is, it could be that they're involved in the PNC or they meet with the local politician or something, but they're doing things outside the actual walls mm-hmm. of the church.
Owning the network of Christ's kingdom as well.
Yeah. There might be some things in the wider diocesan group that they're a part of or what you know, something outside their church. And that's good. It's good for them, it's good for the wider church, it's good for the wider suburb, it's good for the that church as they learn new things and bring it back. The mistake, though, is that senior leaders can spend sometimes too much time on those extracurricular activities and not enough time looking after their own church. They could be at too many conferences, speaking on too many platforms, spending too much time with local business leaders and local members, spending too much time on diocesan committees and to the neglect of their local church. And this is it's a tension, it's hard, it's not the same for everyone, it's not the same for every church, but you can see sometimes people who are too distracted and they miss things that are happening in their own local church because they're spending too much time on the extra stuff.
So you got the other mistake, too little time.
Right. So it's both.
Too little cross-pollination.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. That's right. You can get too focused on your own little thing, grow in the echo chamber and not ever be eyes up. But you can also have the opposite.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Slow or poor response to crises, especially financial crises in the church. Slow and poor. They're two different ones, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. You can have a slow response that ends up being poor.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can have a poor response to a crisis. But,
let's talk about a poor response first and what a good response. Because churches are going to have financial moments.
Yep. You have some kind of drama in the finances. If you don't even know it's happening until 3 or 4 months after, then there's some problem happening there.
I heard a story recently of a senior leader who ended up leaving the church, but he ended up leaving because they ran out of money and he hadn't realised they were running out of money.
Right.
Well, actually, he should have known.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So that would be a poor response to a financial crisis.
Yeah.
Perhaps a slow response to a financial crisis in that it was happening 6 months ago and you didn't realise it until 6 months later. That'd be a slow response. Mm. But you can also respond poorly in that maybe you don't do anything. You know it's happening. You can see it happening. Month one, month two, month three. But maybe you don't do anything. Maybe you don't even pray about it.
Yeah.
You'd want to pray about it.
You want to have others pray about it.
Get the team in. Talk about it. But again, it depends on what the issue is. But, you want to figure out what's the issue. Is it that people are leaving? Is it that expenses have gone up? Is it that we're wasting money on things we shouldn't? Is it that we're overstaffed? You'd want to be like, all right, we can see the symptoms, financial crisis. What's the actual problem? Are our people not generous? Do they hate Jesus? Like what's happening? Why is this happening? And to do the hard work of actually trying to figure that out and not just assume, it's because no one in our church is generous. We need to berate them into giving more. You're like, well, that...
It could
that
be.
It might be the problem.
But it may be something else.
Right. And so just to do the hard work of being disciplined to work out what's the actual problem here.
Mm-hmm.
And then what to do to fix it.
Mm. Parish councils or elders constantly asking the same questions that... I hadn't expected that one, but what do you mean by that?
Well, when you have a parish council who are asking the same questions over and over again, it signals that...
They think something's important that you don't.
That's right. And maybe it is, or maybe it's not. And so you need to help them, teach them, explain to them what this is and why we're not going to do it, or what it is and why it's not important, or what it is and why it's so important. But it needs explaining. And the fact that they might ask the same question every 6 months just signals to you you've missed something with them. You know, if every 6 months they're like, you know what, I actually don't know how to read a profit and loss statement, might be like, you should probably help them to figure that out. That sounds important. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it could be too that maybe you have a parish council that is constantly overreaching their permit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, if that's constantly happening, it's the senior leader's job to help them, clarify for them. Maybe they are doing it because they think it's the best thing and they think it's right. They're not doing it because they're evil. They just think it's what they're supposed to do.
Mm.
And you've not clarified for them the actual boundaries of their role.
Mm.
Things like that.
Mm. Oversaw supporting pet projects was your 15th mistake. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, everyone has their favourite.
What are your pet projects, Craig, that you oversupport?
Well, I'm not sure I oversupport. I feel judged by the question.
You don't accept the premise of the question.
I mean, everyone's got their favourite things. Mm-hmm. The ministries that they love, maybe that they came up through in the church, you know, and they still have a special fondness for that special ministry area, which in one sense is fine, right? We're humans, it's normal, it's natural. The problem is when someone over-supports their favourite thing. It's fine to have a favourite thing, but when you over-support it instead of maybe other things that are equally important or more effective or more significant, then it becomes a problem. You know, if you're pouring all your time and energy into the outreach to bagpipe players, which is a noble ministry, no doubt, we'd all agree, but maybe that's not the most important or the most effective thing happening at, you know, your church. And perhaps some more time and effort and resources, if they went elsewhere, might do more for the kingdom than your pet project that you love so much. So it's that kind of thing. It's fine to have favourites. The problem is not supporting favourite ministries. The problem is over-supporting those pet projects.
Have you settled on a title for the book?
Well, titles I am notoriously bad at. I think every book I've ever written, they've never picked the title that I want. But currently, the working title is Wisdom in Leadership Development.
Right. Okay. And when's it coming out?
Who knows?
Who knows?
This year sometime. Let's hope the first half of this year, but let's hope sometime this year.
Cool. Okay. Craig Hamilton, thanks very much for coming
in. Thanks, Dominic.
My guest on The Pastor's Heart has been Craig Hamilton, and we've been talking about developing wisdom and leadership and the 15 mistakes that senior pastors make. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.